Hello and welcome to the Success Secret Podcast with your host Hussein Talib. I am excited to introduce you to a series of conversations with some of the most successful and inspiring individuals from various industries. My aim is to dive into the stories behind their success and explore the knowledge, strategies, habits, mindsets, and wisdom that have propelled their success. Each episode of the Success Secret Podcast will feature a different guest who will share their unique journey, the challenges they faced, and the lessons they have learned along the way. I will also be covering topics from entrepreneurship and innovation to leadership and personal development. Whether you are an inspiring entrepreneur, a seasoned business professional, or just someone looking to improve your life, the Success Secret Podcast is for you. My goal is to bring you valuable insights and inspiration that will help you achieve your own success in business and life. So get ready to learn and be inspired. The Success Secret Podcast starts now. So in this episode, I'm speaking with Victoria Pelletier, award-winning executive leader, number one best-selling author, in-demand professional public speaker, corporate executive, board director, and entrepreneur. She overcame adversity and trauma at an early age and built resilience, a trait that has remained with her throughout her life and has helped Victoria excel as a corporate executive, mentor, and leader, for which she is often characterized as a dynamic and unstoppable. Victoria, welcome to the Success Secret Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Awesome to have you here in the podcast. So first of all, Victoria, this is the Success Secret Podcast. I want your thoughts and what do you think success is and what do you see other people think about success, whether in a good way or in a bad way?
My thoughts on success have evolved and changed over time in that I come from very, very humble beginnings. And, you know, from very little money. So I saw success being a rise, you know, from a corporate professional standpoint. And I connected success to a lot of things materially. And at some point, I think it was in my 30s, that shifted for me. Although I'm still incredibly driven in both my corporate executive job as well as my side hustle and entrepreneurial side, that includes the public speaking I do. I'm very driven on that regard. Success for me has shifted much more to what kind of impact am I having? What's the legacy I'm going to lead and what makes me happy? So Hussein, what I've told my children who trying to figure out their 23 and 19, success is going to be in their eyes what makes them happy. So whether they choose to be partnered, whatever they choose from a career perspective, as long as it can afford the lifestyle that they choose to lead and they're ultimately happy, that's what I think success is. However, for many, it's where I used to be. And it was just purely around how much money did I make? How much wealth could I accumulate? And how did I show up to the world in that way?
Yeah, like a lot of things connected to success, sometimes to people and how you appear to other people, when that it might not be the actual case. Like, it's funny that how things work or how our mind works, and also connecting things to money. And you mentioned when you reach a certain age, you started thinking about success in a different way. So maybe early years we think about money because we lack a lot of it and we want to do a lot of things with it. But actually, as you grow older and wiser, maybe, I don't know, maybe that's the case, you think more abundant and clear, and you start to look at things more about life and business.
Yeah, I think having more money certainly makes it easier to not think so much about money. For me, I will tell you, there were like two pivotal points in my 30s. One was I made the decision to leave my ex. And so for me, which had significant impact on my family, but choosing to put me and happiness forward, that was number one. But very shortly after I did that, sadly, my ex cancer returned for the second time after being like in remission. And that was another shock to me, just to realize how short and precious life is, and looking at success in a very different way. And, you know, health being a big part of that, our family being a part of it. So, yeah. So that's a little bit around my pivot point.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm actually very impressed. I was reading about you that you were like a COO, chief operating officer, at an early age, which is 24, I think. How or what did you do in general to be at that point? Do you think that you put yourself in a place of authority that you deserve this place? and deserve this recognition, and you are willing to drive a certain business or a company to grow?
I think it was a number of factors, Hussein. So one is I've always been incredibly driven. I think because I come from very little money, I started working at a very young age. So I started working at 11 in a hair salon. By 14 years old, I was the assistant manager of the shoe store I worked at while I was in high school. And then when I was in university, I worked for a bank full-time as well to put my way through school and got promoted through the ranks very quickly. So when I got recruited to become a chief operating officer at age 24, I'd already had 13 years of real work experience under my belt and 10 years of leadership experience. But the drive had me very, very focused on being a strong performer. So yes, there was no doubt that I was a hard worker, but I also very quickly understood how success was measured and making sure I was better and better from a performance perspective and learning perspective. And one of the things you asked me was there a big part of that was also about confidence. So I attribute success to, you know, performance, and that means improving my skills. And so I had learned a lot. Now there was one caveat to what I'll, you know, say around this is I worked for a bank running large scale call center operations. And I became COO of a BPO organization, business process outsourcing, which was predominantly contact center with banking clients. So I met a number of ticks in the boxes, but I performed, I showed up with great, you know, confidence. And I'm not a fan of like fake it till you make it, except when it comes to confidence, because I'll tell you, I had incredible imposter syndrome at 24, and it was a very big stretch role for me. And I'll say the other things is around, you know, personal boundaries that I've created, and also personal brand. Those are some of the things that, you know, have allowed me to do what I've done and be where I am now.
Yeah. So you mentioned being driven and you were hungry to do something. So like at that time, did you think about, and you were driven by how much money you are making, for example, or did you have like in 5 years or 10 years, this is the impact that I am going to be making in this company, and this is the growth that I want to see in this company, and this is the leadership skills that I want to, let's say, share or give to other people that I am working with? How did you see these things?
I actually didn't, although I used the money that I had to demonstrate the material wealth that I'd gained. That wasn't my actual motivator. So I was driven to be better than the buyout. So I'm adopted and my biological mother was like a teenage drug addict. So I was determined I'd be better than the biology. And my adoptive parents were very low from a socioeconomic standpoint. Mom was a secretary, dad a janitor. So I was determined I was going to be better than where I had come from. So that was a big part of my drive. And therefore, when I thought about success in doing more, it was around leading bigger and bigger businesses, larger and larger teams, and having a greater impact in terms of the sales, the revenue, the profitability that I could drive for those businesses. And also, I'm incredibly driven by being challenged. And so transforming businesses and making them not only perform better, but doing things like mergers and acquisitions, that has been a big part of what's driven me from a success standpoint, is to do more and more on a bigger scale that it challenges me every day to ultimately then become, you know, achieve and sit in the C-suite at higher levels.
So for example, if someone asks you now that you have to do, for example, a bungee jump to reach a next level in your life or whatever it is that you think is the next level, would you do that? Would you take the risk? Because when you talk about your parents, so you had some kind of fears, like you were limited in some kind of resources with that when you were, as you are adopted, right? So did you have this kind of fear that you want to have better and more life than your parents? This is like a big picture of things.
Yeah, I very much did. And so my desire to work hard and accumulate wealth, but also never have to rely on anyone comes from that beginning. My parents also declared bankruptcy twice. Mm. Once when I was probably 12 or 13. And then later I bought my first house at 19, which I gave to my parents when I got relocated across the country. And they lost it in their second bankruptcy a couple of years later. I was determined, like, I'm never going to get, you know, in that position. So self-reliance and being able to provide for myself and my family became very, very important to me.
Speaking of self-reliant, so how do you think any business owner or entrepreneur now can put themselves out there and be self-reliant, confident? Though, like, things are changing fast, there is a lot of pressure. Everything wants everything like yesterday. So a lot of things, right?
Yeah, I think it's tough. So first of all, I have this, you know, mantra, and it's actually the title of a book I authored, one of my keynotes, called Unstoppable. And so I am unstoppable. I live with that regards. But I want your listeners to recognize that that doesn't mean that I haven't had to compromise or make trade-offs. So I have an entrepreneurial spirit. I've built and bought businesses myself. Because I'm somewhat risk averse, going back to, I need to provide for myself and my family. I like having a corporate paycheck. So the choice I've made has been to have side hustles, so I have a guaranteed income and be able to build a business that way. And so for your listeners, things are evolving and changing all the time. And if you have to make, because of business or economic conditions, some of those choices, that's okay. And I would say, you know, give yourself permission for that. But that said, I've developed this really, for me, a healthier way of being resilient, because it wasn't always so healthy. You know, building up walls or barriers for yourself, I wouldn't say it's healthy. And so for me, it's being, setting a goal or objective for myself, and that being the anchor. Where is it I'm trying to get to? And then when adversity comes my way, allow myself to feel the emotion, you know, cry a little bit if I have to, but then you know, anchor back on, here's my goal, and building a plan. And it's progress, one foot in front of the other. We don't need to achieve it overnight, but progress each day, give ourselves permission to fail. And then again, I go back to, if you have to make some compromise or change for this immediate short term, give yourself permission to do that, particularly, and again, in this sort of economic condition, to get back to whatever that goal or objective is for yourself. Mm.
So now, for example, when you look at yourself, do you think of yourself, where do you want to be in 10 years? Only that? Or would you advise people to look at themselves in 10 years ahead, for example? Or do you see at yourself, okay, where I am now, right now, and I want to be there in 5-10 years? So do you think having these two points are important, or only the end goal is the important one?
No. I think there's many steps you need to make on the journey. I think it's important to say, you know, my end goal is X, and I can build a path to get there. But the reality is, for most of us, you need to take, you know, steps Y and Z before you're going to get there, and building plans around it. And that's okay. I actually talk more from a corporate versus the entrepreneurial side to people who want to achieve a particular role or something in their career, that sometimes that lateral step that you're going to take is the stepping stone for that next and ultimate goal that you have yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, the listeners need to do both in terms of, what is that end goal? And again, you can pivot and change over time, but now, sitting where I am, here's where I want to be in 10 years, but I need to set some plans for me in this next 1 year, 3 year, 5 years to ultimately get to that 10-year point.
The combination of being basically an employee and an entrepreneur, how does that work? Like, for example, do you think that any human being can operate in two different sides? Like, I do want to serve a business and I do want to serve myself.
It's tough, but I have a saying, who's saying that is, where there's conviction, there is capacity. And so it's tough for me being, you know, so I became an executive, yes, at 24, but I was also a brand new mother. So wife, mother, corporate executive. And with a few years from there, I also became a board director, and I started building businesses as well. So to do it all required compromise. It required extreme discipline to do all of those things. Mm. And so I'm not going to say that it's been a cakewalk, and that there haven't been significant challenges with that and compromises I've made along the way, but that's what I wanted. And so I found a way to create capacity to do the things I needed to do to drive my agenda forward.
Yeah. So speaking of that, when someone becomes like, they want to be an entrepreneur or business owner, they want to build their own thing, that's basically building your own brand, right? So how does that separate yourself from the business, for example, that you are trying to build? And how important it is, especially nowadays, to have this personal brand? And what is your definition, first of all, of personal branding? Is it having a social profile on Twitter or X?
So I think personal brand is one of the things I attribute a lot of my career success to. And I think it's important for businesses. They need their own brand identity, but the leaders and the individuals within need their own individual personal brands as well. And so for those who choose to straddle both, so if you were to look at my LinkedIn profile, it's I would hope people would say it's quite clear. I'm a corporate executive, but I am also a thought leader and public speaker. And so my brand identity is around doing I have multiple interests and I sit on boards and I do different. So you will see my brand is connected to all of those things. But at the end of the day, the brand represents who Victoria Peltier is. So where I see people get their personal brand wrong is they focus on one thing, and that is the subject matter expertise or the eminence for which they're known. So here's the business, like the industry or the job function that I'm an expert in. But that's not all. That's one part of what I believe are four parts to your personal brand. So there's your subject matter expertise. There's what are you passionate about? What are the things that are going to build connection with other people? And so for me, things like the right kind of leadership behaviors and building the right kind of corporate cultures, diversity and inclusion, being incredibly values-driven and ethical. Those are things that I'm passionate about. The next one is what makes me different. So what's the unique value proposition? Why would someone want to hire me versus someone else that has the same kind of experience? And so for your listeners, you need to figure that out. So if you're a data scientist, why would someone want to hire you? What makes you different? And for me as a leader in business, one of the things that makes me uniquely different is my radical candor and complete transparency that builds trust with my clients and my teams. I'm going to deliver the hard message because we need to hear it and to progress and move us forward. Mm-hmm. And then the last step I'd say in that is what is the legacy? What is the impact? And what do you want to be known for? So you need to think about all of those elements coming together. That's what makes people attracted to you and want to be working with you.
Like trust and network or connection, that's very important. Like you can't stress that enough, especially any business, like can it grow, I assume, without having some kind of a network or connection and trust with their, for example, customers or their connections or network. So this is a big and important thing to me. Like, for example, business consists of some kind of a skill, an ability and passion to solve certain problems for people, and about networking, and it goes both ways, like who you know and who knows you, and also about serving people and adding value in multiple ways. But one of them, actually the most important one, is actually to sell, which is I am not doing that much of that.
Well, no. So I think personal brand is the precursor to selling. So personal brand and becoming known for and people wanting to engage with you because of who you are as the whole person is important to then build, you know, your networking. And people do business with people they like and trust and therefore want to do business with. So therefore, they're going to find a way to, you know, come together and work with you or buy from you. And so I think a lot of people that the branding, which is that, as I said, precursor to the sales process, isn't an afterthought. It actually needs to be something you're strategically intentional about and consistent with.
Since we are talked about here about selling, so what do you think is the best type of selling? Is it the relationship selling? So, and what does that mean? And how does that actually work? Is it like only like when you see this kind of messages on social media, especially the cold one? I'm sure you have probably got these kind of messages.
I have. And so relationship-based selling, I do think, is critical. Now, it depends on the business you're in, right? If you're in a direct-to-consumer business selling apparel, then it's very different than when you're in the business-to-business world that I'm in. Where we're trying to uncover value and then develop solutions and understand the sales and buying process. So let's just stick with relationship-based selling in the world that I'm in. That means for me many things. So I want to build authentic relationships with the people that I'm going to do business or hopefully do business with. So when I connect with people, like I don't walk in with a canned pitch, and I tell my team the same thing. We're not walking in with a toolbox. You know, we don't even know what the problem is yet. We don't know what we could potentially offer. So let's go in there, build a relationship. Going back to personal brand, we're gonna connect because we have shared interests, not just a shared world, like business world that we're in. And then once we do that, I want to understand, what's the business strategy? What are the pain points that you have? I often ask the question, how is success measured? And for that individual, how are you measured? Because I want to make sure they're successful so that when I can and say, great, now that I understand that, let me see if I've got solutions in that toolkit and team members I can bring forward and position it from a place of now deep understanding, again, of what the business problem is and how we could solve it. And there's a couple of great books written. There's the Challenger Sale and the Challenger Customer. And one talks about the buyer types and just understanding how you engage with them. And the other talks about, and particularly in a business to business environment, there's over 5 decision makers. And I'm sure this is when the book was written. I'm sure it's probably more than that now that are involved in these decision making. So understand for that influencer buyer, like, again, how are they measured? So is it going to be like purely about price if you're in procurement? But if you're actually on the customer side of that business, it's going to be about quality and delivery. And so again, how I present it's going to be very different. And that's going to help me sell. And again, going back to who my sort of trust and radical candor and being transparent, they know they can buy from me because I'm being completely open and transparent with them. And sometimes for me, that also means saying no. No, I'm not going to give you these SLAs because I can tell you I'm not going to be able to deliver against them. And I don't want to fail. And so I'm going to sign up. And the other thing is I'm going to put my hand up and say, I'm accountable and I'm going to deliver. Definitely. So that all of that and that kind of conversation and the relationship building is what has made my team and me personally successful in this more of a relationship-based sales approach.
Yeah, that's very important, being like authentic with whatever you do. You have to be direct. If I think being direct in whatever it is that your messaging is to the people is very important. You want to be clear about that and deliver that value and trust to these people. And that's how they connect with you and actually grow your business and grow basically the community, your business community, basically. So do you have, for example, some kind of a mentor or someone that you looked up to in your career throughout the years? Or was it just like self-fulfilling prophecy, I guess? I don't know.
I don't have a single person that I would say has been a mentor. Sadly, I've had a number of leaders that I've worked with over the years that were examples that I wanted to be nothing like. So I actually learned how to do the opposite based upon some of the behaviors and actions and language that I saw from others. That taught me how I wanted to be in business and lead in business. That said, there have been some leaders that I've worked with whom I have incredibly deep respect for because we had alignment around, values and integrity. And there was one man that I worked for, and I remember him saying to me, and it was interesting because I don't think he was this type at all, but he said, Victoria, it's okay to be vulnerable. And this was a few years after I was learning to, I think I got a nickname in my 20s as the Iron Maiden. And it's because I was very tough in business, all the time. I delivered. I was very, my bosses and our shareholders were happy, but I think my employees probably feared me versus wanted to follow me. And that's because I showed up with this mask, all business, all the time, because I was 24 as an executive, the youngest by probably 2 decades at the executive table, and I was the only woman. I was afraid to be emotional. I was afraid to be vulnerable and show that there were any like cracks at all in the armor. And so I just showed up a certain way. And I had started to shift to, and change that and go, being more vulnerable, being more authentic, sharing more with people. But I did have a leader, and he said this to me, and it was a couple of years after I'd realized that and I'd started to shift. But it again just highlighted for me that I wasn't where I wanted to be. And like I said, it was funny because coming from, he was like this British guy who like generally never showed emotion at all. Yet he was the one who said it to me. And I've always been really appreciative of Richard, you know, is his name. And one other woman, Laura, who, you know, we worked in an environment where there were, you know, we were put in compromising positions. And she was one who, like me, very values and ethics driven. And so those are two that I just looked up to in business. And the rest have all just been examples that I wanted to be nothing like.
That's very interesting that you mentioned that. That there are a lot of people you work with and interact with that they are exactly the opposite, and you don't want to take them as an example or learn from them, because a lot of things about leadership, for example, is like to know how to communicate, at least communication, which is I am seeing from my own, it's like it's bad. So it's really bad. So when you see that, when you see someone who's higher than you, for example, and they don't know how to communicate well with other same level or below, it's not good. It's bad, and it ruins everything for the business, for the corporation. And exactly, these are the things that you don't want to learn. You want to unlearn them from them. Yeah, and actually, if I was in that place, I would fire them. But it's not me. Yeah. So can you share something with us here with the Success Grid Nation that is not many people know about you, Victoria?
Oh, I think that's hard, Hussein, because I'm an open book and I stand on public stages sharing so openly. So I stumble with that. But well, your audience might detect the slightest bit of an accent. So I'm originally from Canada, although I live in the US. And I picked up playing ice hockey in my 20s. You'd think, good Canadian girl. I mean, that's one of our national sports. But I didn't start playing until my 20s. And I think it was because my ex was a hockey player, but I had both of my kids on hockey skates shortly after they could walk. But that was, for me, a sport that I loved. As an A-type personality that you can probably guess that I am, I generally don't like to do things I don't do well at, but hockey was the thing that I stuck with. I wasn't the worst player on the ice, but I was far from the best, and it took me years and years to get to a decent level to play. But that was sort of one of my pastimes. Although now that I live in Florida, there's not so much hockey available. So I actually haven't played hockey in a few years.
Awesome. So where can people learn more about you and learn more info about you, and where can they can reach you?
So I have a website, which is victoria-peltier.com. And from there, people can choose to connect out with me on whatever their favorite social platform is, whether it be LinkedIn or Twitter. I'm not used to saying X yet, or Instagram, Facebook, et cetera.
Awesome. Well, Victoria, thank you for being here today with me in this episode of the Success Grid podcast. Really insightful stories, actually, I would say, and information. Thank you for sharing.
Thanks for having me.